and welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Welcome to Counsel for the State. Thank you for downloading the podcast or listening online. Remember, all of our podcasts are available through several outlets and are also archived at the Attorney General's website, ag.idaho.gov. This is episode 9 of Counsel for the State. Today, we welcome two very special guests to the program. Jim Cook and Sunrise Ayers are with Idaho Legal Aid Services, an organization that describes itself as a nonprofit statewide law firm dedicated to providing equal access to justice for low-income people through quality advocacy and education. Jim is executive director of the organization. Jim Cook, welcome to Counsel for the State. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Scott. It's an honor to be here.
And Sunrise Ayers is the deputy director of Idaho Legal Aid Services. We appreciate your time as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also with us once again, Brian Kane, the assistant chief deputy in the Office of the Attorney General and co-creator of Counsel for the State. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you, Scott.
So, Jim, let's start with you. We just heard a very short synopsis of what it is your organization is and what it does, but I would ask you to take a moment to sort of expand on that and give folks a little bit more of a flavor of what it is that you do.
Well, first off, I wanted to say I appreciate being here. It's a great opportunity for us because a lot of people don't know about Idaho Legal Aid Services, and it's important for us to get out the word about our services so we can be there when they need us. We are, as you indicated, we're a statewide firm, and I want to stress that we're a civil law firm, which means that the great majority of the cases we do are for folks who are low income, that is, they meet the federal poverty guidelines, and they have a civil legal problem. We serve the state through 7 regional offices. Those are in Coeur d'Alene, Lewiston, Nampa, Boise, Twin Falls, Pocatello, and Idaho Falls. Each office has between 2 attorneys and 2 support staff, typically around 2 attorneys and 2 support staff, and serves between 4 and 10 counties.
And these are full-time attorneys that are working only for you. They're not in private practice and doing pro bono work. They're actually employees of the organization. Is that correct?
Yes, they're paid staff. Not everybody is full-time, but the great majority of folks are full-time. What they do is they focus on what they consider the greatest needs within their local communities.
Sunrise, when people come to your organization for help, civil only, of course, that means no criminal matters are involved, what type of help are they asking you for?
So it might be anything just from, I have a legal problem, I don't know what to do next, where we might give them advice either through one of our advice lines, we have a domestic violence, a senior, and a housing hotline, or through a quick in-person meeting where we give them some quick advice, to helping them fill out a form. We have a lot of forms, letters, pleadings on our website, and then we can also help people with some of the forms they can get from the courthouses, to full representation, where we're taking their case and helping them go to court, litigate whatever that matter is, whether it's a domestic violence issue or, you know, a public benefits issue.
How do you make the determination of whether or not you're going to be able to take on someone's cause?
So that completely depends on each attorney's caseload. So we set priorities where we look at, from stakeholders in our communities and from our clients, what legal problems are you seeing? Those priorities are set, and once we know our priorities, safety, stability, so income, those general priorities, then our attorneys have a lot of leeway to decide which cases they feel really need representation, whether because the facts are really tricky or the legal maneuvering is going to be difficult, or that person is going to have a really hard time with self-representation, maybe because of a disability or a language barrier, they get to make that individual call.
Jim, Sunrise, either one of you, what percentage, when your phone rings or an email comes in or somebody shows up in one of your offices, do you have an idea of how many, what percentage of folks that you're actually able to help and how many you just don't have the resources to assist?
You know, we don't have Idaho-specific data, but the National Legal Services Corporation, which is our primary funder, suggests that nationally, legal aid programs like ours can serve about 20% of the need. So what that means is we go through, as Sunrise indicated, a priority setting process, and we say, hey, we only have so much that we can do. Where are we going to concentrate our efforts? Today, that really means three areas. The largest priority in terms of resources that we commit to is helping victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And this is typically in divorce and custody cases, protection order cases, and also cases related to their victimization. So, for example, it's not unusual that someone who is in an abusive relationship may also need help on housing issues, may also need help on consumer issues. Sometimes the abuser will exploit them financially, as well as do things to try to get them, for example, evicted out of their apartment. So that's the biggest consumer of our resources. In terms of the numbers of cases, our biggest case number is in housing. And we represent a lot of tenants and wrongful evictions, issues with security deposits, repairs, substandard housing. Here in the Treasure Valley, we've had a lot of cases involving mold and substandard housing, and more recently, a lot of bed bug cases. We also do fair housing cases that relate to housing discrimination. Those often involve people with disabilities. So that housing is our second major priority. The third major priority is public entitlements. And really what that is helping senior citizens who need to go onto Medicaid for long-term care, either to get services in their own house or to go into assisted living or to go into a nursing home. So while we have other practice areas, we do guardianships for seniors who are losing capacity, often from Alzheimer's or dementia, or we have minor children who've been abused or neglected or abandoned when we help them get guardianships. Oftentimes we're helping a grandparent get a guardianship for them because their parents are in jail or unable to provide care, maybe a substance abuse issue. And then we have smaller practice areas as well. It kind of depends on the funding in each office. As I said, we have seven regional offices, and our funding is made up of a variety of grants and donations. We don't charge for our services, so sometimes we're grant-driven. We may get a large grant for domestic violence, but we may also get a smaller grant for consumer.
And you just received a grant award within the last week, right? The Legal Enhancement Assistance Program, if I recall correctly.
That's correct.
So that's good news.
That's very good news. And that is a grant from the federal government, from the Administration for Community Living, and it is focused on building out our capacity to help senior citizens with legal issues. And in that project, we'll collaborate with area agencies on aging and other organizations that
sure.
serve seniors.
So what's the demand like for that component? Like, do you have an idea of what folks are asking for, how many folks are asking for assistance within that area, within that senior area?
Yeah, I would say just from the times that we've been able to fully fund, for example, our senior hotline, which this grant is going to help us do again, we tend to see anywhere from 1,200 to 1,800 calls to the senior line in 1 year.
Wow.
And those are just the people that we're able to staff calls with. So
what's the senior hotline?
So the senior hotline is for any senior age 60 or older. Right now it's you also have to be low income, but once we get this grant up and running, it'll be open to any senior, any income level, who has a civil legal question.
Wow.
So they have a question about housing, public benefits, my security deposit, anything like that. We get questions about HOAs, anything. We get them in touch with an attorney, and the attorney calls them, you know, can talk to them for 20 to 40 minutes about their legal question and give them the answers they need and hopefully some resources where then they can take the next step.
So now are these attorneys that are on your staff that they're going to be connected to, or do you have like a cadre of volunteer attorneys that help staff this hotline? How does that work?
These are all our staff attorneys. And then the nice thing is it helps us identify those high need cases that then we can refer to the local office for the follow-up, maybe further representation. We have occasionally had volunteer attorneys help us on the senior hotline, and when we have that, it's great. They kind of need to be long-term committed volunteers because it takes a lot of training. Because it can be any civil legal issue coming in, there's a kind of big training curve to get up to speed on that. Mm-hmm. So that, we have a high demand, I would say, for the senior questions. And in Idaho, we only have, the last numbers I saw, about 0.3 legal aid attorneys for every 10,000 people in poverty. So there's a high demand, and we're trying to use things like hotlines and our website to serve all the people who might not get in the door for full representation.
Sure.
Oh, Jim, I would imagine a part of your job probably as the head of the organization is to go out, knock on doors, seek grant funding, seek donations. Do you have folks who maybe underwrite specific positions? If I'm a philanthropic nature and I have the means, could I pick up the phone and say, Jim, this is perhaps something that I'm personally interested in and I want to help with. I want to write a check to, so you can add an attorney that simply focuses on just this matter.
Yes, we absolutely accept donations at any time.
Okay.
and you can donate through our website at idaholegalaid.org. But really the way we run is we have at any one time probably 30 to 60 grants. And the grants are statewide and they're also local. And so that is the backbone of our funding. In the last 6 years, we started what's called the Access to Justice Idaho campaign, which is a fundraising campaign with two very closely affiliated organizations. That's Disability Rights Idaho and the Idaho Volunteer Lawyers Program, and again, with Idaho Legal Aid Services. And we have focused on getting donations from the from Idaho's lawyers, from the members of the Idaho State Bar. Mm. In more recent years, we've tried to branch out beyond just lawyers, but we started with lawyers because they understand the needs of the civil legal system. They get calls every day from people that can't afford to help.
Yeah.
They can't afford to help because they can only do so much pro bono.
Right.
And there's a huge percentage of the population that just can't afford to access the civil legal system. And lawyers are often very concerned about that because if the system, at some point, the system doesn't work so well.
If lawyers are concerned about it, I mean, is there a bigger societal concern that we've created this robust justice system that's inaccessible for so many?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, we've got three equal branches of government, and when the third branch is not accessible, some studies say to the majority of Americans, that is a great concern, because at what point does government lose legitimacy? And that's the last thing we need in a democratic system that's based on the rule of law.
Yeah, and I know, I mean, our office, we field, you know, dozens of calls a day from folks looking for legal advice. And unfortunately, most often our response is, look, you have to find an attorney. And I think the most immediate response we almost universally get is, I can't afford an attorney.
Yes.
And you know, I think that societally, that's something that we probably need to look at sooner rather than later. Would you agree?
You know, I would agree. And it's funny because I'm a 20-year attorney and I'm not sure I can afford an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that with some jest, but most attorneys I know could not pay what they get paid. Of course, the attorney doesn't get the $250 an hour that they bill. It goes to the firm. And it goes for a lot of other expenses, but this system is really priced out of, I think, the majority of Idahoans' budgets.
So, Brian, I will turn the mic on you and turn you from co-host to source on this one. If this is to be fixed, how do you go about fixing it?
Whew, that's like the $20 billion question.
You've got 20 minutes.
It's probably 20 billion. I mean, I think that, I mean, part of it is that, you know, you've got a system where, you know, the attorneys all have to pay for overhead and all of the sorts of things that enable them to practice, and then they also have to live on top of that. And I think that, unfortunately, societally, all of those things have incrementally ratcheted up, but we haven't necessarily kept up with the means and the ability to pay for those services as they increase in cost. And, you know, we live in an age where we continue to at least attempt to reduce the footprint of government. And so a lot of the government funding sources that maybe would have supplemented those have now been replaced, for example, with fees, right? And so when you go to court, you pay a whole host of fees to go to court. And it's because the government has said we can't afford to bear those costs as government, therefore we're going to place those costs upon the participants within the system. Unfortunately, at times that tends to price the participants in the system out of the system that it was created to assist. And I think that, to me, is a huge governmental dilemma.
Well, I can tell you that part of my job as the public information officer here in the Office of the Attorney General, there's a constituent component to it. And we hear, as Brian said, from people every day who, you know, they pick up the phone and they call and they assume that the state attorney general is a legal resource for them to lean on in a situation where, you know, they're having a dispute with their homeowners association. Or it's, you know, in many cases, it's much more serious or severe than that. And it is a little bit unsatisfying to let them know that, A, this office is the attorney for the state of Idaho. We're not available as a resource. We cannot provide you with private legal counsel. You need to go find a private attorney. And the many, many times, as Brian indicated, that conversation ends with, well, this is something that, you know, because of the situation that I'm dealing with in the first place, yes, I'm completely without the resources to go talk to a private attorney and much less pay for one. And thus, you know, no matter how just their cause may be, usually that conversation ends right there. And as I say, that's a little bit unsettling and a little bit unsatisfying, but it happens almost every single day.
Well, I think there's also a frustration point within there, right? I mean, you think about, say, for example, I have a dispute with my cell phone provider over the amount of my bill. A lot of times my only recourse is to take them to court because I can't get it resolved. I mean, it's the equivalent, you know, the old saying, you can't fight City Hall. Well, we're slowly evolving into this society where you can't fight the corporations, right? Because if you, as the small individual, have a $5 error in your cell phone bill, for example, and you run it through their course and they disagree, you have a choice. You can either keep your cell phone and pay the additional amount, or you get rid of the cell phone and you have no cell phone. Who's going to go to court for $100 a year, approximately? And I think that, you know, to me, that's part of the dilemma that we've got within our system is how do we resolve those kind of smaller one-off disputes in a way that allows for both participants within the transaction to have an equal seat at the table.
This is a question for anybody who wants to take a stab at it, but it is Idaho different in that we do not provide a lot of remedies, that it's sort of, you know, all or nothing, or you have to pursue litigation in the court system by hiring a private attorney, or in some cases leaning on organizations like yours? Do other states handle this a little bit differently, and maybe there are some in-between steps between, you know, 0 and 60, or going nuclear, whatever you want to call it?
You know, I think that's a good question. Idaho is unique in that we are one of, I think, 2 or 3 states now that doesn't fund civil legal services for low-income Idahoans.
Do you get any state funding?
We do not.
Okay.
We get some pass-through funds, federal funds, for example, Older Americans Act funds through the Administration for Community Living go through the Idaho Commission on Aging, and we get some of those. But the state does not allocate any funds to us, and that does affect how many people we can serve. It is interesting to me how many people call us and assume we're a state agency and assume that the system will provide them with representation in the civil system, and they don't understand that's the criminal system where you're entitled to representation in certain circumstances. So they don't understand why they can't get help And I think your bigger question, though, is I think your question was, are there things that we could do in Idaho to make the system more accessible? The state has done a lot in certain areas. So, for example, they created the court assistance office system. And so there is a person sitting in the great majority of our courthouses. Sometimes they travel, but in state courthouses, and they help unrepresented litigants try to maneuver through the system. They can't give legal advice. Some of them are attorneys, but they can't give legal advice. But they help a lot of people with basic information. So that is a help. The Idaho Supreme Court some years ago said, look, let's at least come up with some consistency in the legal forms for really commonly sought legal needs. And so they came up with a committee of lawyers and judges who has created, I'm going to guess here, probably 300 legal forms that are designed for pro se litigants. They're free of charge. They're available online. They're on our website, as well as the Supreme Court website. And they help people who try to navigate the system by themselves. When I first started practicing, I recall there was a lady trying to do a divorce, and she had forms from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And the judge reluctantly threw her case out because it didn't have the right statutory references. It was not designed for the system. And she was angry. The judge felt really bad. But that had to be the outcome. And so coming up with these standardized forms was a very good step forward. But the inherent problem is many, many, many legal problems are complicated, and you really do need some legal training to resolve them. And that's where forms, court assistance offices, even our hotlines are only of so much utility. Sometimes you just gotta have an attorney.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, just to kind of emphasize Jim's point there, you know, the Idaho judiciary as a whole recognizes the dilemma of access to justice. And and I mean, I think from what I can tell from where I sit, and granted, I'm kind of in the bleachers over here, it's very clear that they have dedicated some time and resources and made it a priority to say, hey, look, we want to give folks this opportunity. We know that not everyone can afford an attorney. Here are some ways that we can make that happen. And so I do want to note, you know, the Idaho judiciary has absolutely made this a priority, and I think that they've developed a really robust set of resources to go along with that as a priority.
Sunrise, in the last 10 years or so, there's sort of been this advent of the legal Zooms and this kind of standardized, you know, Jim was just mentioning standardized forms and that sort of thing to maybe take out some of the busy work or it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all but it's kind of like, are these resources that people, low-income people, are using, are they realistic to help them solve their legal woes?
In some situations, I think yes. So I think forms and AI will help with some of the more, I would say, more simple legal issues that people might face, like a basic Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Some of the forms and AI available right now to help people with that are really great. But as Jim mentioned, there are some things that are just complex, or the power differential is so great that a form or AI will never get people the help they need. So as an example, we have a housing affordability crisis right now. And so we see a big uptick in evictions. And we're seeing it across the country, not just here in Idaho. And so a tenant facing eviction, not only can it be legally complicated, but they may not feel that they even empowered to sort of try and bring a form in and try and save their house. They get the 3-day notice, they just move out. And so in Ada County, for example, they've instituted mediation as a way to try and help people through that process to not lose their home. But in some other jurisdictions, cities have funded sort of a civil Gideon system for housing because it's such a basic human need where they're guaranteed in an eviction case to have an attorney there. So I think I'm excited for the ways that it can help, but there are going to be these areas where you're just going to need a lawyer to help navigate the system.
So can you explain civil Gideon? That's an interesting term, and one that folks may not be aware of the history. And right. It's an interesting story.
Yeah. So just with the Gideon case is what said that criminal defendants were entitled to an attorney. And so some people advocate for there are some types of civil issues like your house or your kids, custody of your kids, where you maybe we need a civil type Gideon, a right to an attorney in some types of cases.
So what you're saying is if you're in jeopardy of losing your housing, that would be a situation where, hey, we got to make sure that you've got an attorney and you're represented and you understand your rights and what the ramifications of whatever these decisions are going to be upon, you know, your housing and your life. And there's definitely a ripple effect to losing a house.
Yes, definitely. And I certainly don't advocate for a position one way or another, but sure. It is something that's being experimented with in other right. parts of the country. Is this something where we have to give people an attorney? Because like you said, it can ripple into lifetime poverty because they don't have a house, so now they can't get to their
job. Yeah, it's kind of a core fundamental, you know, access to justice.
Sunrise, do you know in those situations where this is being piloted, who's footing the bill for that extra representation?
Yeah, so it's there. The two I know of are in New York City, and Jim may know more, and I think in San Francisco or one of the larger California cities, it might be Los Angeles, and they are paying for it because those cities tend to have some tax revenue that they can use, and I don't know if they raised taxes or fees in other ways to help pay for it.
Mm. Going back, you mentioned AI, artificial intelligence. Can you give me an example of how AI is being used in the legal world?
And Jim will know some of this too, so I'll just say a couple of things. I know that we've looked at it at Legal Aid as ways where people might be able to, through a chat bot, ask a question, even if we don't have an attorney there ready to answer, that AI could at least get them through, do this, to so that they're preserving rights, not making their situation worse until they can talk to an attorney.
I think that's an area that nationally the Legal Services Corporation is promoting. Again, they're our primary funder, and they have what are called technology initiative grants that they fund throughout the country. And artificial intelligence is one of their priorities. And it's very interesting. The access problem is a national problem. And so they're very much into promoting technology in many different approaches. Our legal advice lines are just kind of, that was what they promoted 20 years ago. AI is kind of the current push. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of programs that are playing with it. We actually just got a grant that would allow us to enhance our senior system, but that includes a portal that will help guide folks as they seek services. Sunrise, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's a legal risk detector. It may not necessarily use AI, but we're going to put in the fundamentals where we can integrate AI with it later. But one thing we found with seniors in particular is that they may not always know they have a legal problem. So they have this life problem. They don't ever reach out to an attorney about not getting their security deposit back or not getting Medicaid approved because they think of it as a life problem. So the legal risk detector would let them say, oh, I'm having this situation in my life, and figures out for them, oh, you know, you actually have a legal problem, and here's who you should get in touch with who could help you with that particular type of problem.
What's the highest demand that you think you see coming in through your legal advice lines?
I think in terms of numbers, right now it's housing. Brian, you mentioned that we just got this grant to enhance the seniors, services to seniors, and Sunrise mentioned that will allow us to serve folks of all incomes on the senior line. When we had such funding in the past, that seemed to be the very largest. Again, mm-hmm. That's just coming online.
Sure.
So I would say right now it's housing. The senior is probably, in the long term, going to become the biggest. Yeah. And part of that is demographics. Yeah. As the state ages. And also, we have had more flexibility in the kind of help we can provide to seniors. It can be across the board. And recent years, we've seen it's gone from just kind of straight up Medicaid and power of attorneys to things like senior exploitation mm-hmm. and scams. And unfortunately, seniors oftentimes just have additional needs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're easier to prey on, unfortunately.
So Sunrise, you mentioned there a few minutes ago about, you know, sometimes a senior was your example. They may not even, they have a life problem, but they may not realize they have a legal problem. And, you know, I'd mentioned that one of the things that I do in my everyday is interact with constituents who are having problems in some situation. And the amount of understanding that they have, and I will admit the amount of understanding that I had of our legal system in the state of Idaho or wherever I may have lived in the past, really honestly has been lacking. Do you find that as sort of an electorate, the everyday citizen of the state of Idaho just does not have a great understanding of sort of the lay of the legal land here?
Yeah, I think that probably is true. And I know the Idaho State Bar works really hard on trying to help by doing presentations in schools and doing the Turning 18 guide that they do.
And they have a Citizens Law Academy.
Yep.
Where it's kind of a 3 or 4 month program where they get together once a night to learn about the legal system.
Yeah, so I think it's a problem that attorneys are aware of that we're trying to address, but that it's still a huge knowledge gap. Because how many of us know someone who just moved out of their apartment having no idea that they were required to give 30 days notice? I mean, it's that kind of base level understanding that I think as lawyers we might take for granted that people know, when in reality there is a big knowledge gap there.
And I think that it's, for our listeners, it's important to know that our office actually works in combination with the legal aid services. We have, for example, within the housing realm, we have a landlord tenant guidelines manual that we have that's available on our website. And so we are attuned to that. When the Attorney General announced his settlement in the national mortgage foreclosure crisis, that settlement, a portion of that settlement went to Idaho Legal Aid to assist folks with housing issues that arose out of foreclosures and whatnot. And so I think that, you know, to me, this is one of those areas where, yes, we're government, but we also have a constituent service element that very closely aligns with and overlaps with legal aid to a large degree. Not all the time, but to a large degree.
We mentioned at the top of the program that part of your description of your organization on your website is providing low-income people with quality advocacy and education. Talk a little bit about not the advocacy. We've been talking about that.
Yeah.
The education component of what you do.
Yes. So
what does that take on?
And again, the theory with this is it's a lot easier to avoid the egg getting broken and scrambled in the first place. And so prevention. And what we try to do is do a lot of different approaches, try to educate the public about their legal rights, about how to avoid problems. We do have a website with a whole lot of free educational content, and that includes a number of videos.
And that website is?
And that's idaholegalaid.org.
Okay.
And what those include things including Medicaid and what to do if you're a debtor, and if you have been sued and you owe a debt, you know, what to do if you're being evicted. A lot of kind of real common issues that our client community sees is on there, and again, it's free of charge. We also have, over the years, created, it's called the Senior Legal Guidebook. One of my dreams would be to send that to every person in Idaho who turns 60 or 65 on their birthday. And it's free of charge, it's on the website, and it covers kind of the A to Z of issues we think most seniors may see, whether
that's
wills, advanced directives, what to do as you get older and you may have problems managing your funds, how to avoid getting scammed. It just has a lot of different really helpful information. We have some materials for a range of folks, from farm workers to people who've suffered housing discrimination. And so I would just invite the public, if you have any kind of legal problem, come down and check out our website and see if there's something on there for you. We also have attorneys go out and they do public education presentations, oftentimes to senior centers, to community organizations, to Head Start organizations, to stakeholders. We try to get out and speak to them about hot issues. During the Great Recession, we had attorneys going out all the time speaking about foreclosure, because foreclosure was such a huge problem in the state then. what the areas we kind of speak about depends on what the public wants from us. But right now, housing is very big. The demand for housing, especially here in the Treasure Valley, is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of folks who are facing housing problems.
Sunrise or Jim, I will put this almost done with my list of questions here. So this final question to you. I think it's very interesting. You mentioned, Jim, that about 20% of the inquiries that you get, that's the number that you're actually able to take on. So that essentially means 4 out of 5 of the people who contact you, you have to sort of say, you know, there's somebody else that you're going to need to go to for help. How do you deal with the inherent built-in disappointment in those numbers? And is there a burnout factor and a frustration factor that you have to kind of manage with the attorneys that you work with?
Yes, and I think it's more our like you said, frontline support staff. They're the ones who have to tell people no, which is hard because you come work at Legal Aid because you care about people and you want to help people. So we actually have developed a resource guide for our intake staff where we have resources in every county, every judicial district, where if they have to tell somebody no, they're not just shutting a door. They're saying, this isn't a case we can take, but here are some resources I can tell you about. And it might be a clinic going on there, or it might be an attorney that's agreed to take cases for a super reduced fee. So we try and empower our staff with other options to give people so that it's not just no, it's no, but let me tell you about this, this, or this. And sometimes it's resources on our own website, like the ones that Jim mentioned.
But that really is a problem. Let me give you an example. We have a satellite office at the Nampa Family Justice Center, and we just got a third attorney there. But historically, we've had two attorneys. In 2016, I may get my numbers a little off here, but in 2016, they had over 600 referrals for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault for two attorneys.
Wow.
And then in 2017, they had over 700 referrals. And based on the numbers so far this year, we're looking at over 800 referrals. And so what they do is, now there's three attorneys, but what they do is they use what's called a lethality assessment that was developed by the Idaho State Police, and it rates the threat to the client from 1 to 7. And so right now, we can only help people typically at 5 or higher.
Mm-hmm.
So those folks who are victims of violence and sexual assault, who are less than 5, we tend to give them a phone call, some advice, and they're on their own. And it's very frustrating because if you look at the social safety net in Idaho, we are sort of it when it comes to civil legal. And so it is hard on our staff because they are saying, we can't help you and probably nobody can help you. So it is very tough. I mean, we can give them referrals, but sometimes that's just the hard reality.
So Jim, if somebody is hearing the podcast today, they're interested in donating to the organization to help address shortfalls like that one, how can they go about doing that?
Well, they could go to our website, and they could, there is a donate option there, or they could go to the Access to Justice Idaho website, and they could donate there.
Access to Justice Idaho.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And of course, they could also, if anyone actually wanted to come down, I'm in the Boise office. If anyone wanted to come by and say hi, they could chat with me if they wanted to know more about the program, or they could chat with their local office.
Very good. That is the voice of Jim Cook. Jim is the Executive Director of Idaho Legal Aid Services. Jim, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the podcast.
Thank you.
And Sunrise Ayers, Deputy Director, thank you as well. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And Brian Kane, Deputy Idaho Attorney General. Thanks to you, Brian, for being on the program today.
Always a pleasure.
And I'm Scott Graff. We appreciate your time as well. Thank you for joining us for this episode, number 9 of Counsel for the State. Remember, Counsel for the State is always available at ag.idaho.gov. Episodes are also available through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. See you next time.